I interviewed Morgan Freeman and Hilary Swank and Clint Eastwood for Million Dollar Baby, and they all won an Oscar.
Okay.
So maybe I can be your lucky talisman.
Can you look a, you know, rabbit's footy kind of baby? All right.
The I tried to do some research on you, and you don't have a whole lot. You have burst on the scene, and I know I wouldn't say you're a late bloomer because I know as a writer you've been blooming all your life.
No, but you know it's funny about that. My father always used to say when I was a kid, David, you're going to be a late bloomer. I didn't think he meant quite this late.
Hey, you'll take it though.
I'll take it, absolutely.
You're my hero. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I've been around for a while. I've been in Hollywood since 1979, so I've had a long career. But it's been a checkered career, let's put it that way.
Do you know who you could play, who facially you look like? Norman Mailer.
Yes, I've had that. I've been told that. Once years ago, I was at the Telluride Film Festival and I was jogging, and cars kept on going by, honking and waving and shouting, Norman, Norman. I finally said, look, I'm not Norman Mailer. He can't jog at this altitude.
You're my hero, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but I want to get a couple biographical facts that I couldn't find. You were born in 37, which is a great year for film, because Redford was born, Warren Beatty was born, Tony Hopkins was born, Dustin Hoffman, and there are a whole slew of people. So it was maybe the greatest year in American...
I just wish I looked like Redford and Beatty and all of these guys, but you know.
You look quite good. But I don't know what date it was. What's
July 13th.
July 13th. So, well, I will give you a very premature happy birthday
Thank
wish.
Thank you so much.
You were born in England,
yes,
and then left because of the war?
Correct. My very first memory, just before my third birthday, we were living in Lingfield, Surrey, because we had left London with the outbreak of war. Probably a rather good thing, because a week later, an incendiary bomb came through the roof of my nursery. We were living in Lingfield. My father and his brother, my Uncle Zygmunt, had built a sandbox for me. And they were painting the sandbox, and I was helping them, which meant I was painting myself, probably. And I could hear, my first memory is thump, thump, thump in the background. And it was the guns of Dunkirk. And very shortly after that, my life changed completely. Like so many upper middle class British kids, I saw very little of my parents. I was raised by a nanny who I absolutely adored, Adelaide. She had a great mass of curly hair. And one night, I guess this is my second memory, she kissed me goodnight rather wistfully and said, I'll always be with you, David. And I never saw her again. She had been called back to her family because of the war. And I came from a family that didn't explain these things, just accepted it as a kid. Next thing I knew, we were on a boat going to America.
How old were you at this point?
Just sub three, just minus three.
And fortunately, they didn't send you immediately to the West Coast. You were raised in Long Island, right?
I was raised
in Philadelphia.
You've got to say it correctly. Long Island.
Okay, Long Island. I'm from Philadelphia,
yes,
so.
Hitler was going to invade England. That was a foregone conclusion. And they were trying to get out as many children and families as they could. To get the families out, the head of the household had to be someone who wasn't going to be in the war and could support the family outside of the UK. My father had been in World War I, so he was clearly too old to be in World War II, and he had a business with an office in New York City.
Okay, move ahead. You went to Cornell? Did you graduate from Cornell?
Yes, I graduated from Cornell in 59.
Okay, great. Now, here's why you're my hero. You were born in England. You're making an independent British film. And you have brought the UK back to fuck. You really have.
You
created that, a word that's totally dead. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's Anglo-Saxon or Middle English or whatever. When you were writing those speeches, did you laugh as I sometimes do when I'm writing?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, When I write, I say all the lines out loud to make sure they feel right and that an actor can say them. So I have a great deal of fun. And in the scene that you're talking about, the F word...
No, we don't call it the F word. It is fuck.
Okay, fuck. All right. Or fork in Old English.
Okay, fork.
In Old English.
Okay, fork.
Now, that scene is there, of course, for a very good purpose. It's not there to shock or to titillate, which is why the rating of R is so ridiculous. Look, this is a word, it's said on every playground, of every school, all over the world. There isn't a kid over 7 who doesn't know the word and has probably used it and got his mouth washed out with soap.
But the word was exhausted. I mean, you hear it in every hot tub, whatever that film was. It's every other word. And you brought it back to potency.
Well,
you alone brought it back to potency.
Thank you so much. The savior of the F word. I love that.
that's
great.
That's a great thing.
Well, the reason it's there is this. It is how I cured my stutter. I was, and therefore I felt that Bertie probably had a similar moment, although I can't prove it, of course. When I was 16, my stutter was very bad still. And I'd been told that if you don't get a handle on your stutter by the time of late adolescence, your chances of doing that really diminish rapidly. Which is, by the way, one of the reasons I thought Bertie was such a brave man. He was slogging away through his 20s, his 30s, his 40s. I was 16, hormones had hit. I couldn't ask a girl out for a date. And even if I could, and even if she said yes, I couldn't talk to her. I got very despondent at first, but I'm not.
He is being despondent right now.
Yes, I'm being despondent. It's the end of a bad cold here. But I don't stay down very long. I'm a kind of a proactive person. So I got angry. I got defiant. And I thought, well, fuck it. Fuck everybody. It's not my fault. I didn't do anything terrible. I didn't sleep with my mother or kill my father the way the Greek boys do. You know, why have the gods visited this terrible thing upon me? It's not fair. Fuck it. If I am stuck with stuttering, you are stuck with listening to me. I have a right to be heard. Fuck you all. I'm gonna talk. Once I made that mental turn in my mind, within 2 weeks, the stuttering melted away and was gone. I was auditioning for the school play. I even got a very small role. It was Shaw's Andrew Gleason the Lion. I played a Christian about to be eaten by a lion in the Colosseum, but I didn't stutter.
The language is witty and funny, and yet somebody might say, oh, that word, that awful word. And yet, what also struck me about the film was the essential decency, that you were a believer in human decency. Is that right?
Thank you very much. I'm glad that comes through. That makes me feel unmoved by that. Yes, you know, George was a decent man, a very decent man, and I hope that comes through. It's one of the reasons that I'm, by the way, quite upset at a low-key smear campaign that has started both in this country and in the UK, saying that he was anti-Semitic, which is absolutely nonsense. Let me be very blunt. I lost my paternal grandparents to the Holocaust. Do you imagine that I would have spent this major portion of my life thinking about, reading about, and writing about a man who I knew to be anti-Semitic? I find that a vile suggestion. And I have read almost everything that's been written on the man for many years. There's never a whisper that that's the truth. This smear campaign, which is, by the way, based on an unsigned letter. It's a cowardly thing to do, to not say who you are and step forth and enter into discourse.
One of the things about being the target of a smear campaign means you're being successful.
Right. It's all based on one line from a very obscure a very obscure letter in which he says, well, it's probably a good thing that the illegal refugees are not being allowed into Palestine. Now, this was the policy of his government. It's not his policy. And the king can't contradict the policy of his government.
I want to end on one positive. I think the decency is really personified by Elizabeth.
Yes.
By Helena Bonham Carter. Yeah. Would you talk about? She doesn't have much to do, and yet she glows in that.
Absolutely, and she's so important. She was a pillar. She's been described by an eminent historian as a marshmallow constructed by a welder. Which I think is lovely. She's the one who found Lionel Hoke. She's the person who was always there by her husband's side, supportive, loving, and Helena captures that. And she's also wonderfully naughty.
Well, let's if people do not understand the beauty and the charm and the decency of this film, fuck them.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thanks.